Tomorrow, another issue of Discover Magazine hits shelves. We have one of the editors here to give us a sneak peek at some of the most interesting stories in the upcoming issue.
Gemma Tarlak is a senior associate editor at Discover Magazine based in Waukesha. Gemma, welcome back.
Hi, great to be with you again.
Well, let's start by talking about something that's getting pressed for a while, the story of the Tasmanian devil cancer, which has been kind of baffling scientists and decimating the devil population in Tasmania for a long time. Catch us up. What's happening there?
Well, it's been a tragic just about 14 years since they've been studying it, and the cancer's been around, as far as we know, for about 20 years. I have to preface this by saying I have a thing for Tasmanian devils.
They're adorable.
I adore them.
Yeah, oh, I was surprised. I mean, that the cancer is incredibly disfiguring, but the animals are really cute.
And they're sweet. You know, I actually spent several weeks in Tasmania a few years ago and got to go to all the sanctuaries where they're trying to create this sort of reserve insurance population in case all the wild ones are wiped out. And they're just the sweetest, most timid, you know, they're like a frightened little dog, like a little Boston Terrier, and they just make funny noises sometimes. But anyway, so this cancer has been baffling them because it is a contagious cancer, and that is extremely rare. There's only one other known contagious cancer, and that infects dogs. But they couldn't figure out how exactly this cancer was moving so rapidly from one devil to another. And they finally settled upon the fact that the proteins on the cell, you know, when you think about a cell, it's kind of got all these proteins on top that tells other cells in the neighborhood basically what it is. And sometimes those proteins tell your immune system, hey, this shouldn't be here, and your immune system fights it off. Well, these particular cells in this Tasmanian devil cancer, they hide some of their proteins. And it's kind of a remarkable science going into it, way, way too detailed to sum up here in a couple minutes. But they figured out that it's hiding the proteins, so the cell enters the new victim's bloodstream, enters their body, and it's not recognized as being foreign. The body treats it as its own, as one of its own cells. So it's very scary, but at the same time, the fact that they're making strides in this research means that they may be able to save the devils and sort it out and advance cancer research, too, at the same time.
Well, now that they've figured it out, it's a stealth cell, in effect.
Yeah.
Is that pointing toward the kind of research they need to do to try to stop it?
You know, what they're trying to do is figure out a way that the cancer and the devil can coexist, because they looked at something like a vaccination program, and that's just not feasible, because they would have to go into the wild and find these very reclusive animals and not only vaccinate them, but then vaccinate their offspring, because the offspring wouldn't inherit the immunity. So they're trying to find ways to help the cancer evolve more quickly. It may sound counterintuitive, like, why do we want to help the cancer? But right now, the cancer is too deadly for its own good. You know, ideally, this is kind of a parasitic cancer, to use the term parasite loosely, but it's basically feeding off the animals as it infects each one. And they're trying to figure out a way to make the cancer less deadly, which would make the cancer more likely to survive, because the animal it's infecting are going to live longer. But at the same time, those animals are going to live longer. So they're trying to, I guess, broker a peace deal is one way of putting it, between the devils and this contagious cancer.
Now, you said the cancer's been around about 20 years, and there's some optimism now about understanding the cancer better. But can you tell us a little bit about what the population has done over those past 20 years?
Oh, my gosh. In some areas, the population has fallen by 90%. Other areas, they're doing a little bit better. About only 30 to 45% of the population has been lost. But the cancer is still spreading. So, you know, I can remember even when I was there in 2011, the researchers I talked to were very sort of pessimistic and thinking that creating these insurance populations on in sanctuaries and also on remote islands might be the only way to save the devils. But now they're actually more optimistic, and they're thinking, we saw the rates really dropping, but we think they may have bottomed out, because the devils that have not been infected may actually be, you know, have a kind of resistance to the cancer, and that it's not just that they haven't come in contact with the cancer. Maybe they've already come in contact with it, but maybe it has not infected them.
And this is a region of the world where we've lost a lot of mammal species in recorded history, right?
Yeah. Australia, I believe, leads the world in the dubious honor of having the most mammal extinctions known. And Tasmania is a special case. It's a little island off the south coast of Australia. And it's, in a lot of ways, kind of an ark, if you want to think of it, for other species that have gone extinct on the Australian mainland. And part of it, it's very secluded. There's a really nasty stretch of water between the mainland and Tasmania that makes it difficult for a lot of kind of cross-species populations. But they're surviving, and the Tasmanian devils, which were once on the Australian mainland, went extinct there 5,000 years ago, and their last toehold in the world is on Tasmania. So.
Well, it's encouraging to know that there might be some bright light at the end of the tunnel as they move forward with that.
Yeah, and, you know, just the fact that all of the researchers are optimistic gives me hope, because, you know, usually you get a mix like, oh, I don't know if this is going to work, but they're all saying, yeah, we think we're narrowing down how to deal with this.
Well, another one of this month's features is about Hurricane Sandy. Tell us about that story.
This is a really interesting story for me personally, because I actually grew up in the New York City area. And, you know, I know how populated it is. I've seen flooding even when there wasn't a hurricane, just after a heavy rain. And the author's argument is basically Hurricane Sandy was a bad storm, yes, but the destruction it caused was pretty much a man-made disaster. And his theory, or his argument, is that New York City, greater metro area, is built on a floodplain. They've been filling in land, reclaiming it from the sea for centuries, you know, for 300 years. And when we ran the story, our photo editor did a great thing where he found a map and lined it up exactly with Google Earth maps. And you can see in lower Manhattan just the enormous chunks of land that have been reclaimed from the sea. And these were all the areas that were hardest hit when Hurricane Sandy came through. So it's kind of a provocative argument, but he really backs it up with a lot of history.
This is after Sandy. Were people talking about this before Sandy, saying, hey, we're putting ourselves at risk of flooding based on where and how we're building?
Yes, you know, this has been an ongoing conversation in the New York area, but it was really interesting, and he gets into this a little bit, that after Hurricane Sandy, you know, you had New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, Mayor at the time Michael Bloomberg, President Obama, everyone saying, oh, you know, nature, she's so awful, this is the force of Mother Nature, oh, this was a major assault by Mother Nature. Nobody reacting to Hurricane Sandy really said, well, we kind of saw this one coming. And the thing is, we still haven't learned from it. You know, Ted Steinberg, the author, mentions they're still planning on building, for example, a 26-acre real estate development. It's going to be built right in the middle of a floodplain. So that, you know, what we learn from history is that we don't learn from it, you know?
Well, do you think that there is hope on the horizon, that the argument and acknowledgement that this is a floodplain could lead in the future to different building practices, especially as maybe the East Coast starts to see more severe weather?
Right, and that's actually something else that Ted gets into in the story, that we are in just a natural cycle. Set aside climate change and all the things climate change is going to do, but we're just in a natural cycle of the warming ocean, so we can expect more and more intense storms. Plus, with climate change, we've got, you know, the ocean levels are rising, et cetera. One would hope that this would kind of sound the warning call, but it's very unclear. And in fact, the only thing that gives me hope, and I never thought I would say this, Donald Trump decided not to go forward with one of his many real estate projects because of concerns that it would get washed away in another Hurricane Sandy. Hmm. So there's, you know, there's a little bit of hope there.
Well, and finally, you have a little fun in this issue, previewing the summer's top science fiction movies. And speaking of nature exposing the folly of men, here's a clip of one coming out.
In 1954, we awakened something.
There's a nuclear test in the Pacific. Not tests.
They are trying to kill it.
It's being Godzilla. And in this issue, you've got a flowchart to help us decide what summer sci-fi movies to see. We've got that on the Central Time Facebook page, along with a Tasmanian Devil video, by the way. How did you design this summer sci-fi flowchart?
Well, you know, there's so many of these big movies that when you watch the trailers, which is really all that's available right now, they all have the epic music and the darkly shaded characters and all the, you know, lingo, like, in a world. Yeah, you know, and so just because of the sameness of a lot of the trailers and a lot of the pitches and buildup that you get from the studios, we decided to just have some fun and let people know what's coming out and when it's coming out, but have some fun with what you might like. So, for example, as we go through the flowchart, one of the questions is, do you hate Tom Cruise? Yes, no. You know,
or do you like Men in Tights? Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone has an answer to that question, right?
What about Tom Cruise in tights?
That's just a mental image that's going to be...
Sorry about that.
Ooh. All right.
Yeah. Well, tell us.
Sit down and recover.
Sorry, Jem. I took you out of action. Well, tell us about some of the movies you are excited about based on your flowchart. What looks good?
Well, thanks. And I am a hardcore Godzilla fan. I love it. Loved it since I was 3 years old. And my grandpa would take me to like Saturday matinees that would run those chopped up American versions of the Japanese original. So I love Godzilla. The trailers I've seen for this one, it looks like they finally did justice to him. You know, it's not going to be the 1998 mess with Matthew Broderick. So I'm really excited about Godzilla. And I actually interviewed Matt Reeves, who is the director for Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, for another story I'm doing. And we chatted a little bit about both the computer-generated effects in the movie and also his approach to depicting an ape civilization. And, you know, I wasn't quite frankly really interested in seeing the movie until I talked to him. And it sounds like he did a lot of really interesting things to create this feasible ape civilization.
Well, Gemma, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us again.
My pleasure, always.
In a world full of confusing science information, Gemma Tarlak helps us make sense of it all. She's Senior Associate Director at Discover Magazine based in Waukesha. She joins us each month at about this time.
And don't forget, you can find the flowchart, which will help you figure out what summer movies you'd like to see, on our Facebook page, along with some videos of the very charismatic Tasmanian devils that Gemma Tarlak was talking about.